The captives were led through the jungle from early dawn until noon, when they reached the bank of a wide river. There, they were given water, but no food. Under the watchful eyes and ever-pointed muskets of their captors, they were allowed a brief rest while the canoes were readied for the journey downstream. Coarse shouts and loud-voiced commands in a meaningless tongue filled the air. The Atmunchi people, now so tired and hungry that their fright and bewilderment were secondary, squatted on the ground with heads between their knees. Atmun looked from one to another of them, signaling with his eyes, and through the weary group, a quiver of hope ran, uniting them to him. Whatever they had left behind, whatever lay ahead, their chief was with them, their traditional father. They knew that he would care for them. Atmun realized that he and his people were being enslaved by power and cunning, and that they must bide their time until they could effect their release in some way. Slavery was a phase of tribal war, as old as African life itself, but the Atmunchi had always been a free people, putting no bonds on others and resisting any put on them. Atmun looked from one face to another. He was troubled in his heart about his people, for something had made them abashed and spiritless. The slavers ate well and drank freely. Then, while the sun was at its highest, pouring fierce heat upon the land, they crept under crudely constructed shelters of wide palm leaves and slept. No one took any thought of the Atmunchi. Under the rain of heat, they waited patiently, each one knowing that a rain of fire would be his if he moved. When the sun was westering and a breeze had come up to rustle the palms and ripple the river water, the white men came out from their shelters and started giving brisk commands, which the natives in their employ hastened to carry out. The captives were loaded into their long canoes, 20 to a canoe, with a native in the stern to direct the course downstream. A white man in the bow faced the captives with a musket, loaded and leveled on them. Manacled and chained to each other, the Atmunchi did little more than crouch in the boats, the women moaning to themselves. One of them in the rear canoe still held his head unbowed. He was determined to watch the course they were taking, so when the time came that they could assert their freedom, he would be able to lead his people back to their own village. The current was swift, and the long, narrow, heavily laden canoes moved down it easily. On both banks of the river rose a forest of huge trees, from whose tops trailed a network of vines and flowers. Below was the dense undergrowth of the jungle land. Now and again they passed small clearings where flocks of goats grazed, and tribesmen watched their goats with more interest than they did the canoes going down the river. At such places, the eye could range inland from the sedgy shore of the river to distant walls of mountains. Atmun, with his keen sight, saw torrents of icy water rushing down rock slopes. Then the trees thickened again. The banks of the river were clothed with giant ferns and mosses. Leaves large as cloaks hung down from the trees. Monkeys, chattering in their aerial homes, peered out at the sight of the canoes and swung limb to limb to travel with them for a while. Sometimes, where the river lapped the shore, a hippopotamus lay sunning his great bulk, or a crocodile slept with an open mouth. The sun, though it had dropped far down the sky, still had the heat of day, and the forest blazed and quivered with its beams. Blossoms of brilliant hue were twice beautiful as they found their reflections in the water. All along the way, the land cried out the New Year's growth. Reds, yellows, greens were still pale with spring, but under the sun's powerful rays, they would soon intensify to the fullness of summer's coloring.